Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome in, everybody. Episode 2 of the College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Torres. Hope everybody is doing well here. I am recording here late Wednesday night as we head into week 2 of the college football season. And first of all, I want to say, hope everybody enjoyed week 1. It was great to have college football back. It was great to not think too much about stadium capacities and COVID and this and that. Just great to have college football back starting on Thursday with Tennessee and Bowling Green, Ohio State and Minnesota, UCF and Boise, and a lightning delay until 2 a.m. Eastern. Gus Malzahn doing weird stuff late as if things have never changed. So great week 1, obviously Thursday all the way into Monday night with Ole Miss and Louisville. And I want to thank you guys for the support of week 1 of the College Football Betting Show with Aaron Torres. Essentially, the response was incredible. You guys listened. You loved it. Many of you reached out to me privately to tell me how much you liked the show. Some of you left a rating and review on the iTunes page. And what I would tell you is a couple things. One, first of all, this is the last week where we will not have really a normal taping schedule. The goal is to do 2 shows a week going forward, one on Sunday night into Monday to when the lines come out to kind of preview the week ahead. And ultimately, I know a lot of you do wager. You wouldn't be listening to this show if you didn't, and you want to get the best line possible. And so I will give you kind of some quick reaction on Sunday. And then from there, we will do a full preview on Thursday. Beyond that, what I would also say, just kind of a quick reminder of the goal of this show. I want to be quick. I want to be fast-paced. I know if you listen to the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, you know that at times I can go a little bit long. And when I say at times, I basically mean all the time. That is not the goal of this show. The goal of this show is to come in, get you the news, the information, the numbers that you need to make you the smartest better possible, which brings me to the next point. As I said last episode, as I said in episode 1, the goal is not to come on here and pretend that I hit 90% of my picks or 98% of my picks or whatever. Would I like to? Of course. We all would. But that is not ultimately realistic, and that is not ultimately the goal of the show. All the goal of the show is to get you the best information possible and let you guys make whatever decisions you want in terms of betting and gambling. I hope sometimes you listen to this show and you say, wow, Aaron really made me think about that game in a way that I had never really thought about it before. You know what? Maybe I will throw a few bucks responsibly, by the way. Please gamble responsibly. Throw a few bucks on that game. At other times, it's going to make you say, you know what? Torres broke down that game, but I don't really agree with him. He gave me good information, but I don't know that I agree with his analysis. I'm going to fade Torres. I'm going to bet on XYZ team. That is ultimately the goal of this show. Not to tell you what I'm picking, not to tell you to bet this, do this, put your house on that, bet the mortgage on this, steal from your grandma's purse on that. No, it is to get you the best information possible, and that is the goal. And as we head into week 2, what I would just say is this. Be very wary, because what I can tell you definitively as a guy who has been doing this for a while, week 2 is one of the toughest weeks to really kind of gauge and evaluate for everybody, and I include myself. Because when you go into week 2, what ends up happening is ultimately you have 1 week of data, and it's that kind of middle ground where you don't want to completely overreact to what happened in week 1. But at the same time, you also don't want to ignore the results either. You also don't want to ignore all that off-season prep. And so it's that fine line of trying to figure out, what can I actually take from week 1? What is actually important? And what do I just need to push aside as early game jitters, opening day jitters, all that kind of stuff? So with that said, it is a tough week, but let's get into this week's slate. We'll start with the big three games, Oregon versus Ohio State, Washington at Michigan, and Iowa State and Iowa. Take a quick break, come back, talk about the rest of the games, Arkansas, Texas, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, Pitt, on and on and on and on and on. And I would finally say really quick before we get to the Ohio State-Oregon game, I think today's show is going to be more reflective of what I hope this show to be. I think in week one, I do think there was a little bit too much focus on the big games. I was only talking Wisconsin, Penn State, and Clemson, Georgia, and UCLA, LSU, because there were so many big games in week one. And so today, yes, we will obviously talk the big games, but also I hope to discuss some of the smaller ones, the ones that maybe you're not thinking about that should be on your radar and should be at least worth considering when it comes to making a wager. Again, not telling you how you should feel or what you should feel or how you should bet. Just want to give you the best information possible. And like I said, great first episode, more to come, hope to have a sponsor soon, so really fired up for what is ahead. So let's get into the big three games of the weekend, and as I said, the first one, noon, big noon kickoff on Fox, Joel Klatt, Gus Johnson, Jenny Taft, and we got Oregon at Ohio State. And you look at this on paper, top 15 matchup, Oregon the preseason Pac-12 favorite, Ohio State the Big Ten favorite. It's basically a preview of the Rose Bowl if this was 1962, right? Not so much. First of all, in terms of Ohio State, listen, I think you can criticize a lot of things and a lot of people. I don't know that Ohio State is one of them. I understand that the first night of the season did not look incredible against Minnesota. There was actually times during that game where it kind of felt like the game was getting a little bit away from Ohio State. They were down in the middle of the third quarter, but to their credit, they pulled away. And I think what you saw from Ohio State was a couple things. One, they have the best skill position talent in college football. You can argue it. You can debate it if you're a Georgia fan, if you're a Bama fan, if you're an Oklahoma fan. But what I'm just going to tell you is they have the best skill position talent in college football. You know how I know that? Because Jameson Williams went to Alabama. He is one of their best receivers, one of their best skill position return guys. He left Ohio State. He transferred from Ohio State because he couldn't get on the field at Ohio State. So you saw that skill position talent at play for Ohio State. Five touchdowns on Thursday night against Minnesota of over 35 yards. And that just shows you how gifted these skill position guys are. It shows you how explosive they are. And it shows you it doesn't matter field position, down, distance, whatever. Ohio State can beat you on any given play. And so you look at Chris Olave, four catches for over 100 yards, including two touchdowns. You look at Garrett Wilson, the effect that he had on that game. Travion Henderson, the true freshman. Ohio State's skill position talent is incredible. In terms of a second takeaway from that Minnesota game, I thought CJ Stroud looked pretty good. And again, I understand that Ohio State was down late in the third quarter, and you could sit there and say, they're overrated. Torres, what are you talking about? All I'm telling you is point blank is that Ohio State in that game was on the road against a team that won 11 games 2 years ago, and they still won by 14. CJ Stroud did finish with four touchdown catches, thanks in large part, again, to his skill position. Guys, I should mention, by the way, Ohio State playing Oregon, it is a 14.5 point spread, the over-under of 63.5. Now, as it pertains to Oregon, I'll just tell you this. I know I just said a minute ago, it can't be about, you can't going into week two overanalyze what happened in week one. You have to remember the big picture. You have to remember what your thoughts were on a given team or a given player or a given program or a given conference coming into the season. But what I would also say is Oregon on Saturday against Fresno State in week one, they actually confirmed to me who I kind of think they're going to be. And I was just not a fan of Oregon coming into this season. I know they are the two-time reigning Pac-12 champ, but if you go back to last year, they really struggled down the stretch. First of all, they were the Pac-12 champ in name only because Washington actually won the Pac-12 North, but because of COVID, and by the way, I don't want to bring up COVID on this podcast, but never forget, COVID played a role major time, big time last year. COVID knocked Washington out of the Pac-12 championship game. And when it knocked Washington out of the Pac-12 championship game, Oregon got in, Oregon beats USC, and Oregon is the quote-unquote Pac-12 champion in name only, no different, by the way, than in UFC or boxing when the real champ vacates the belt because they won't fight X, Y, and Z guy, and they give it to somebody else. And so I wasn't a fan of Oregon coming into this year, and it was because they weren't very good down the stretch last year. They lost their final two regular season games, backdoor their way into the Pac-12 championship game, beat a bad USC team, and are able to claim the Pac-12 championship. And then, oh, by the way, they got destroyed by Iowa State in the Fiesta Bowl. Final three games, their offense was abysmal. They score 17 points in their season finale against Oregon State. They score 31 against USC in a game where they only had 243 yards of total offense, and then scored 17 against Iowa State again in the bowl game. Offense wasn't good. I bring all this up. You're probably thinking, Torres, why are you reliving Oregon football in 2020? It's because we saw very similar traits from the offense last week against Fresno State. Yes, Oregon beat Fresno State. Yes, you're sitting there saying, well, it's week one. What does it all mean? I think it's a continuation from last year. And again, I'm not trying to force my opinion on Oregon down your throat. And if you feel differently about this game, then go ahead and do what you need to do. But they win this game 31-24. And if you go back and look at this game, their first two touchdowns came off Fresno turnovers in deep in Fresno territory. And on the game, Oregon actually was outgained by Fresno. And so essentially, Oregon was gift-wrapped 14 points early in that game against Fresno State. And then from there, Fresno State essentially outplayed them. Now, I know Kayvon Thibodeaux, the number one potential number one pick in next year's draft, was not available late in that game. It remains to be seen as I record here late Wednesday if he will play on Saturday against Ohio State. But I just do not like this Oregon team going into Ohio State. I do think Ohio State, in the bigger picture, they need to work on the big plays. They need to work on, just kind of building drives. They can't be a team that does rely on explosive plays, that expects to rip off 3, 4, 5, 50-plus yard plays over the course of a game. But I look at this game and I just worry about Oregon. I worry about that offense. It has not been great under Joe Moorhead. I know Joe Moorhead is living on the reputation he had at Penn State before he got to Mississippi State. But I'm just telling you, this Oregon team was outgained by Fresno State. Fresno State had more first downs. Now you're asking them to fly cross country, go on the road, play a noon Eastern kickoff, which is a 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff in Oregon, and expect them to keep things close. Not telling you what to do. I like Ohio State minus 14.5. Let's get to the other big Pac-12, Big Ten cross-division game. Again, it's like 1981 all over again. It's like a 1981 Rose Bowl right in front of our eyes as Washington travels to Michigan. Two other interesting teams off of week one. The spread opened at 5, so Michigan was a 5-point favorite. It is all the way up to 7 as I record here on Wednesday night. And the over-under started at 52.5, and now it's down to 48.5. How about that? What it tells you? Well, you know what it tells you. Washington stunk last week, and that is why Michigan, the spread continues to go in Michigan's favor, and the over-under continues to go down because Washington was really bad. And I'll just tell you, I was not totally shocked by the result that came out of Washington against Montana last week. Now, look, did I think a top 20 team was going to lose to an FCS team? No, I can't say I thought they were going to lose to an FCS team. But at the same time, I did not understand the Washington preseason hype. Listen, I had Phil Steele on the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. There is no person that is more respected in the world of college football than Phil Steele. But he tried to shove it down my throat that Washington was a Pac-12 and college football playoff dark horse. And my buddy Bernie Fratto, who hosts on Fox Sports Radio straight out of Vegas, was trying to shove Washington as a potential playoff team down my throat as well. And I said, look, I'm not saying that I don't understand why the numbers back up Washington. But again, you have to take the numbers and the analytics. I'm not a huge analytics guy. And you have to marry them with what you see on the field. And so coming into the season with Washington, this is what I said. Last year, they played a grand total of 4 games before COVID wiped out the rest of their season. They had a first-year head coach. Remember, Jimmy Lake took over for Chris Peterson. And after that, we really didn't learn all that much about him. Washington always played really good defense under Chris Peterson, and it was clear that Jimmy Lake, that was going to be his identity. But the offense really, really, really struggled with Dylan Morris coming in as a quarterback last year. For people who did not watch a ton of Washington, it was a very conservative offense. They didn't try to stretch the field. I don't even know if Dylan Morris has it in him to do that. He finished with 4 passing touchdowns in 4 games, about a 60% completion percentage. I just said, no disrespect, I'm not here to tear down a college kid. I just don't think that team is very good. So what happens? They go into a game against Washington or against Montana last week, and they lay an egg. But they didn't really lay an egg if you followed this team last season. I just don't think they were that good. I mentioned Dylan Morris. He finishes 27 of 46, 226 yards, three interceptions. Again, not here to tear down a college kid, but he is limited in what he can do as a quarterback. It will be interesting to see if Sam Heward, the nephew of Brock Heward, the son of Damon Heward, who is a true freshman, gets the start here this weekend. But Washington finishes with just 291 yards of total offense. Check this out. 4.9 yards per pass, 2.4 yards per rush against an FCS team. And that's the team people were trying to shove down my throat as a playoff contender? Give me a break. And I think Washington's going to be a team all year. You got to factor in for unders, and you got to factor in for low-scoring games, because the one thing that they do well is they do play defense. They actually held Montana to 232 yards of total offense. The problem was they made mistakes. They couldn't punch it in. They had three turnovers, and because of that, they lose to Montana, and now they are a touchdown underdog going into Michigan. In terms of Michigan, I got to say a few things. I actually was kind of impressed by Michigan going into last weekend, or coming out of last weekend, I should say. I know it's easy to rip Jim Harbaugh, and listen, I was the guy that was the early Jim Harbaugh apologist that quickly learned you can't defend this guy, okay? He doesn't win the games that he has to. Up until this year, he was paid as though he was a Dabo Sweeney, Nick Saban-level coach, and he just isn't. Takes a pay reduction, but what I would also say is that in the offseason, I give him credit. He revamped his staff. He got a younger staff. There is actually only one assistant coach on the staff right now that is above the age of 40, and I thought that they played funner and looser and more relaxed against Western Michigan last week. Now, Western Michigan, bad team. These aren't PJ Flex Western Michigan Broncos, but Michigan, they took care of them. They finished with 551 yards of total offense, a lot of balance between the pass game and the run game, and I will just say that this looked about as explosive of a Michigan team as I can ever remember under Jim Harbaugh. Those early days when he first got there, it was kind of 3 yards in a cloud of dust, old school Big Ten. He realizes he can't beat Ohio State that way. He tries to evolve. The offense doesn't look very good. This was the first time that I sat there and said, they got some real skill position guys, and they get after it on defense. They beat Western Michigan by 33 points and get the victory in week one. Now, a couple things going into this game that do worry me a little bit. One, you probably heard, but their best skill position guy, their best player, Ronnie Bell, does go down with a season-ending injury, so I do feel bad about that situation. But then beyond that, I just don't know if I trust Jim Harbaugh as a 7-point favorite in a big game where everybody expects him to win. Not saying you shouldn't bet it, just saying I have my concerns about Jim Harbaugh. He tends to play conservative. He tends to be that NFL side of Jim Harbaugh comes out in big games where he thinks it's about ball control, it's about field position, it's about punting, it's about not making mistakes. You can't do that in college football when you're playing in Ohio State or you're playing in Notre Dame and they got guys that can rip off a 70-yard play in one snap. And so when I look at this game, I think Michigan is actually kind of playing into Washington's hands. The 7 feels like a lot to me. You do with that information as you please. And I will also say, the under, I got it at 48.5. I actually like the under. This feels like a 20-10, 20-14, 14-10, 17-14 type game in one way or the other. I have no disregard for Jim Harbaugh. I'm not rooting against him, but this just feels like a game that that everybody finally gets some support of Jim Harbaugh, and then he lays an egg. So that'll be interesting. Final big game, and then we'll get to some smaller ones. We'll take a quick break. The big one, it's the Cy Hawk Trophy, baby. You fired up? Iowa at Iowa State, top 10 matchup as Iowa comes in at number 10 in the country. Iowa State comes in at number 9. Very interesting point spread simply for this reason. Iowa State is a 4.5-point favorite off a sloppy win at home. The over-under down to 46 points as I record here on Wednesday. And there's a chance by the time you listen to this on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that it could be even lower. In terms of the game itself, a lot of money coming in on Iowa. Iowa is the road team, but I understand why. They played Indiana at home last week, and they dominate, and they win 34-6. Iowa State, they play Northern Iowa from the FCS. You kind of sit there and say, didn't really look all that great against Northern Iowa. And so Iowa State barely holds on. They're playing an Iowa team that dominated Indiana last week. And I'll say this for Iowa. They were actually really, really, really good last year. They finished the year with just two losses. They lost their first two games of the season, then ripped off a bunch of wins to end the regular season. They finished the regular season overall at 6-2, so a six-game win streak to end the season, and came into this year with expectations that looked really good in year one. So a lot of money's coming in on Iowa in this rivalry game against Iowa State. Here is my concern, though, if you're betting Iowa. This is just, again, getting you the best information you can. Iowa dominated Indiana 34-6. Here's the catch. Iowa had two pick sixes, two interceptions returned for touchdowns, which resulted in 14 points. And so what I always try to do, and this was, by the way, why I wasn't into Indiana coming into this season, is because Indiana took advantage of a lot of turnovers last year. They had a disproportional number of turnovers, and I said, that's not sustainable over a 12-game season for a second year in a row. So when I look at Iowa, I sit there and say, yeah, they won 34-6, but 14 points came off defensive turnovers, and if they don't get that, they win 20-6, and do we feel the same way about them coming into this game? I don't think we do. Also worth noting, their quarterback, Spencer Petras, 13 of 27, 145 yards. And so when I just tell you, two touchdowns off interceptions for 14 points, the quarterback throws 13 of 27 for 145 yards, does that inspire you to rush to the window and bet Iowa? Not for me, it doesn't. I also think with Iowa State, again, it's what I said. It's finding that balancing act of what did you see in week one? What did you expect coming into the season? And a lot of people really liked Iowa State coming into this year. They're deep 19 starters back off a team that they lost their opener to Louisiana Lafayette, finished 7-1 down the stretch of the regular season last year. And I think a lot of people are overreacting to Iowa State struggling in week one. Personally, I think Iowa State's going to win. Now, it's worth noting, by the way, this game is in Ames. College game day is going to be there, so this is going to be huge for the town, huge for the state, huge for the rivalry. It is at Iowa State, and nobody on Iowa State has won this rivalry game since they've gotten there. Iowa State hasn't won this game since 2014, so there is no one currently on their roster, unless they have an eighth-year senior that I'm not aware of, that has won the Cy-Hawk Trophy. All worth noting, I do think it's low scoring. I understand why the line keeps moving lower and lower in terms of the over-under, but I do think a lot of I don't want to call it overreaction. Reaction to Iowa, worth noting, 14 points came off defensive touchdowns. You take those out, it's a totally different ballgame. All right, so I know I said we want to keep this show under 25 to 30 minutes. I'm already at 20 minutes. I want to take a quick break. I want to come back, talk Texas, Arkansas. I want to talk Kentucky, Missouri. I want to talk Tennessee, Pitt. And then we'll get to a couple other games that are worth noting. All right, everybody, I am back. Good to be back. And thank you again for your support of this college football betting podcast with Aaron Torres. Should mention, by the way, all my picks for the weekend are up, available at AaronTorresOnline.com. A lot of great NFL stuff, too. If you're listening to this on Thursday and you want some NFL insight, you know that is not my area of expertise. Austin Montgomery is doing some great NFL gambling content. We got some daily fantasy content. John Frisella, one of my writers there, is awesome as well. He also hosts the Pickin' Pigskin podcast winners for those of you who want to wager on the NFL. And as I mentioned, by the way, we should get a gambling sponsor here soon if you want to help out Aaron Torres Media. But let's get back into the games. And let me just say this. The Big 12 may be falling apart. But before the Big 12, we had a little conference called the Southwest Conference. And we have a Southwest Conference old school showdown Texas versus Arkansas. It used to be the Southwest. In the future, it's going to be the SEC. But right now, it's an out-of-conference matchup. Texas Open is about a 6.5-point favorite. It is up to 7, and the over-under is 57. What's really interesting about this game is this. First of all, shout out to Texas, right? I'm not going to do the Texas is back. They're incredible. They're unbelievable. But they were one of two teams that I really thought actually exceeded expectations in week one in terms of a positive. They were better than I thought they were. I thought them and Florida State were the two teams that looked better than I was expecting. Texas takes care of Louisiana 38-18. Remember, Louisiana came into last week ranked in the top 25 off of a 10-1 season. And of all the games that I talked about on this podcast last week, really that was the only one that did not go as I expected at all, as Texas completely dominates. On the positive side for Texas, and it was basically all positive, their quarterback Hudson Card, who's the redshirt freshman, won the starting job. He was awesome. 14 of 21 passing, 224 yards. Bijan Robinson, that kid, I don't know how much longer he'll be in college football. He's a sophomore, so he may only have 1 year after this year. Like, I think that guy is going to end up in New York at some point as a Heisman Trophy candidate. He is that good and that explosive as a skill position player. Also worth noting, the Texas defense was actually really good. They held Louisiana to 76 yards rushing under 3 yards per carry. Again, just a very un-Texas-like, business-like win over a team that they were supposed to beat. Then there's Arkansas. And listen, I don't want to say Arkansas was bad on last Saturday. They played a Rice team that's pretty good defensively, but final score 38-17. What gets lost in that game, though, is that it was 17-17 going into the fourth quarter. Arkansas scores 21 straight points in the fourth, kind of pulls away, going away, and you don't really realize that that game was actually pretty close. If I'm an Arkansas fan, the thing that kind of concerns me coming out of that game, KJ Jefferson, who is now the starting quarterback, Felipe Franks was there last year. KJ Jefferson is there this year. He only completed 48% of his passes last year in game one, 12 of 21, one touchdown, one interception. And I just don't know that Arkansas is going to have the vertical passing game that they're going to need to compete in the SEC West, the toughest division in college football. Now, as it pertains to this game, I would just say this. I think you have a couple of kind of interesting things going at each other one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. Arkansas obviously is going to want to run the ball. KJ Jefferson did not prove that he could pass the ball again vertically, but they're going up against a really good Texas rush defense. Now, on the other side of the ball, you have, or on the other side really of the game itself, you have Texas bringing a redshirt freshman quarterback into a hostile road environment after winning at home in the comfortable confines of Austin last week. So to me, I don't feel great about either side. Taking Texas as a full touchdown favorite on the road feels a little aggressive to me against an Arkansas defense that was really, really good last year against a lot of different schemes and opponents and matchups and game plans and all that stuff. To me, if anything, the under feels like the smart play here, only because I don't trust Arkansas's offense, and I don't think Steve Sarkisian is going to try to do too much to put on his plate for his freshman quarterback. I do like the under here of 57. Do with that information as you please, but again, freshman quarterback going on the road concerns me. Speaking of freshman quarterback going on the road, how about Texas A&M at Colorado? It is a 17-point game. The over-under is 50. And again, it is worth noting that, first of all, this is technically not a road game, okay? So the game is in Denver. For people who don't know, the University of Colorado or Colorado University is in Boulder. So by technicality, it is a neutral site game. But you would think, in theory, that more Colorado fans would be there than Texas A&M fans. And so when I look at this game, a couple things. First of all, from Texas A&M's perspective, I'm just curious if Jimbo Fisher really kind of lets loose and lets his quarterback, Haynes King, do what he's going to eventually need to do for Texas A&M to have success. First road venue, Haynes King in his opening game against Kent State last week was not great, threw 2 touchdowns but also 3 interceptions. And so remember, Texas A&M brings back 9 starters off last year's team. They have a lot of great skill position guys, including at the running back position with Isaiah Spiller. And so my hunch is this one feels super low scoring, and Jimbo Fisher kind of does what Jimbo Fisher does. He is not a guy that puts a ton on his quarterback. This is not Ryan Day. This is not Lincoln Riley. They're not going to throw the ball 40 times on the road, and I think he plays it super conservative. Now, what's interesting with Colorado, while the focus is on Haynes King with Texas A&M, Colorado is actually starting a freshman quarterback as well, Brendan Lewis, who threw for just 102 yards last week against Northern Colorado in a pretty convincing win. Colorado leaned a lot on a running back named Jarek Broussard, who was last year's Pac-12 leading rusher. And so I think you see a lot of ground game. I think you see a lot of teams feeling each other out. Colorado doesn't want this game to get away from them. Jimbo Fisher doesn't want to put too much on his quarterback's plate. It feels low scoring. And also, it's worth noting, this is going to be the best defense Colorado plays all year with a freshman quarterback. Under feels like the play to me. It's actually one of my favorite bets of the weekend. Not telling you what to do, just telling you the under is probably one of my favorite plays of the weekend. Let's stay in kind of an interesting cross-conference Power 5 matchup. In the SEC, let's go to Tennessee hosting Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh actually the three-point favorite on Rocky Top, the over-under of 57. Couple really interesting things. First of all, said it, if you follow me on Twitter, at @Aaron_Torres, you know, I enjoyed the Tennessee thing. Now, Tennessee was very aggressive early in the game last week against Bowling Green. Josh Heupel really kind of took his foot off the gas. It was clear that he did not want to, frankly, you know, I don't think he wanted to show too much, but I don't think he wanted to push all the buttons in week one against Bowling Green. He wanted to get a win as Tennessee's head coach and get out of there and prepare for Pitt. Joe Milton, 11 of 23, 140 yards. But it's going to be a completely different deal against Pitt. Now, it's worth noting with Pitt, they kind of are who they are, right? They you know, there are certain teams in college football, they just very simply have an identity. And I think Pitt is that team. Pitt is a team that's never going to be great, but they're never going to be terrible. Pat Narduzzi, this is now year 7. In his first 6 years, how's this first stat? They've never been worse than 5-7. They've never been better than 8-5. They are basically college football's version of the Seinfeld bit, Even Steven. Never too high, never too low. They're always kind of the same. But the one thing they always do is play defense. Top 20 in defense last year. And they do bring back Kenny Pickett at quarterback, who went 6-3 as a starter last year, missed some time with injury. Pitt went 6-5 overall. But his three losses as a quarterback, two were by 1 point and one was to Clemson. He was actually pretty good as a quarterback last year and as a starter. So to me, this is one I don't feel great about. I would probably lean Pitt on the road, but again, you're asking Pitt to go into Tennessee in the middle of the day. It's a noon kickoff, and this could be one where, again, it's just really, really tough to know in terms of, and one thing that I've always wanted to tell you guys is I never want to feel like I am, again, forcing things on you. I will say it's not supposed to be super hot in Knoxville on Saturday. That would obviously be a concern with a team more from the northern part of the country going south. It's only supposed to be about in the low to mid 80s on Saturday as I record here on Wednesday night. And so I would lean Pitt. Don't feel great. Let's get to another quick out-of-conference SEC matchup, and that is South Carolina against East Carolina. Fascinating game. The game is at East Carolina, and what's especially interesting about this game is that the spread has been all over the place, okay? South Carolina opened as about a 2-point favorite. Middle, early of the week, it actually got to East Carolina as a slight favorite. As I record here Wednesday, it is back to South Carolina as a 2-point favorite. And so it's just really hard to gauge what is going on in this game. When I look at this one, I'll say this. South Carolina, I think, actually might be the second least talented team in the SEC. Vanderbilt's the worst team in the SEC. I actually think South Carolina might be number two. They just didn't have very much talent left over from the Will Muschamp era. We know that they basically started a grad transfer at quarterback last year. Now, the guy who actually won the job, Luke Doty, is supposed to be back. But this is actually a true road game for South Carolina. And while they beat Eastern Illinois last week, at home in their season opener, Eastern Illinois is not only an FCS school, they were actually really bad last year, 1-5 overall as an FCS school. They played in the spring last year, and I just don't think there's very much that you can take out of that game if you want to bet South Carolina. On the flip side, East Carolina, first of all, remember, this is a home game. This is a home game for East Carolina, meaning that it is one of the probably, frankly, biggest games in school, recent school history, in terms of getting an SEC school on your home campus at your home environment. Big game for East Carolina. Like Tennessee, the weather isn't going to be crazy. It's not going to be one of those 100-plus degree days down there in Greenville, North Carolina. But I'll just say, you know, East Carolina can have an explosive offense at times. They were not great in week one against Appalachian State. But it's worth noting, Appalachian State has a really good defense. They finished in the top 20 nationally last year. I would actually lean East Carolina in this game. I don't feel great about it. You know, if I was in Vegas or if I was betting on my mobile app, it would probably be a one-unit play. In other words, a very, very, very small bet. I do think East Carolina has the edge being at home. I just don't think South Carolina is very good. I really don't. Will be fascinating to watch. Last couple games featuring an SEC team. First of all, we got our first SEC versus SEC matchup on Saturday. How about this? Kentucky hosting Missouri. And these are two teams that, to me, are very interesting. First of all, with Missouri, goes back to what I said a minute ago with Oregon. It's okay to, you know, you don't want to over-evaluate what happened in week one, but at the same time, you also, you know, you want to stick to your preseason prep, okay? If you saw something in the preseason that kind of rang an alarm bell, light bulb over your head, stick with that. And with Missouri, They were an interesting team because they went 5-5 last year, but the stats were really wild, okay? I think, first of all, most people think that that offense was a lot better than it was. Connor Bazelak was the quarterback at Missouri. He actually threw for 4 touchdowns in an upset of LSU early, and I think people think that Missouri had this incredible offense all year. They didn't. How about this for a stat? Connor Bazelak, 4 touchdowns. In the LSU game, he had 3 touchdowns the rest of the year, okay? The defense on the other side was terrible, gave up 50 points per game in their final three, 51, 50, 49 in the final three games for Missouri last year. Now there's Kentucky. Kentucky's the opposite. They were really – Kentucky's been boring as old as time. Eddie Grant was the offensive coordinator. This offseason, Mark Stoops shook it up. Brought in Liam Cohen, an offensive guy from the Los Angeles Rams, Sean McVay coaching tree. They tore it up in week one, okay? 554 yards of total offense, 419 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. And I don't want to oversell a win over Louisiana Monroe. This was a really exciting team and a really interesting team. And I think they're the second best team in the SEC East. I truly believe that. I am not a Florida guy. I think this might be the second best team in the SEC East. Will Levis, the quarterback, Wandale Robinson, I believe is probably the most explosive skill position player they've had in a while. I know Benny Snell was there, but Benny Snell was kind of a between the tackles guy. Wandale Robinson is very explosive, and you just got to keep an eye out for this kid. Kentucky is at home. This is a night game, 5-point favorite. I would lean Kentucky in this game. Let's get into some Pac-12 After Dark before we get out of here, okay? 3 games with Pac-12 After Dark. The first one, Stanford-USC. I don't even know how you begin to take a guess as to how to even wager on this game. USC is a 17-point favorite. But listen, here's the thing you need to know about USC. Kind of what I was saying with Arkansas earlier. They beat San Jose State in week one 30-7. But they were only up 13-7 going into the fourth quarter, and they had 17 points going away. Betting on Clay Helton is it's just playing Russian roulette, okay? It's running in the street with a blindfold on and hoping you'll get hit by a car. I don't know how anybody could possibly bet on Clay Helton. But Stanford, on the other hand, was abysmal in their opener against Kansas State. 233 yards of total offense. Stanford already has made a quarterback change, bringing in Tanner McKee this week. I can't even tell you how to wager on that one, but that one is worth noting. 2 other games that are kind of intertwined. The first one is San Diego State, at Arizona. Arizona is a 2.5-point favorite. They opened as about a 1-point favorite, a 0.5-point favorite. It's up to 2.5, and this is really interesting, okay? So one thing about me, I think you all know, I host Fox Sports Radio on Saturday nights. And so in the studio, we have on all these games, all these random games, and one of them last week was San Diego State hosting New Mexico State. New Mexico State is probably, to be blunt, the worst team in college football, in FBS football, outside of my alma mater, UConn. And they were leading San Diego State 10-0 at halftime of the game against New Mexico State. And so San Diego State wins 28-10, and everybody thinks, oh, easy win for San Diego State. They were awful. And so they rally to win, and I don't know what to make of this game. Arizona is kind of what I just said about South Carolina. Don't think they're very talented, but they played well. They actually outgained BYU last week in a loss. Their head coach, Jed Fish, said he thought they left about 150 yards of offense on the field with overthrows and things of that nature. But I thought they played really, really, really well, better than people realize because they lost to BYU. San Diego State, on the other hand, played not as well as I think some people would think just looking at the final score. Final game. It is BYU. I just mentioned they beat Arizona in their opener. They are hosting Utah in a rivalry game, the Holy War, which was obviously not played last year because of COVID. Utah is actually a 7-point favorite. It opened at 5, and this game is skewing towards Utah, over under at 48.5. And what's interesting, it's actually now 48, excuse me, according to DraftKings. And what's interesting about this game is exactly what I just said. BYU wins their opener. They are at home for this game, and the line keeps going in favor of Utah. What does that tell me? I don't think BYU is very good this year. As a matter of fact, I don't think we know how good BYU was last year. I know they go 11-1, Zach Wilson, this iconic season, but let's never forget, what did we say about BYU last year? They didn't play a single Power 5 team all season long. And so if they didn't play a single Power 5 team, how are we supposed to know how good this team actually is? It's hard to tell, and on top of that, keep this in mind. It wasn't just Zach Wilson that they lost off last year's team. They had their best wide receiver was drafted by the NFL. Their starting left tackle was drafted by the NFL. They also had 8 starters lost on defense. They only returned 4, so I guess it was actually 7 starters on defense, only 4 starters back on the defensive side of the ball. I like Utah. Utah brought back 10 starters on offense. Charlie Brewer, the transfer quarterback from Baylor, won the starting job. The defense was one of the best in the Pac-12 last year. Utah, I think, is a very interesting team against BYU. But again, Utah is a 7-point favorite on the road at BYU, and the number keeps going up. All right, I think that is it for week 2 of the College Football Betting Podcast, and I hope today was a pretty good reflection of what this show is and what I want it to be going forward. I don't just want it to be about the 3, 4, 5 biggest games of the year. I want to get into some of the other big games, and at the very least, just get you good information, and you do with it as you please. I hope you enjoy. All I would ask is this. If you do enjoy, if you've made it this far, do me a couple quick favors. One, make sure to subscribe. You can do it on Apple, Spotify, Podcast Addict, Google Podcasts, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe to this show. Also, do me a quick favor. If you got friends that like to wager, you got friends that like to bet, share with them, send it to them, say, hey, this guy Torres, he's a little bit crazy, but at the very least, he gives me good information, so make sure to share. Again, also rate and review, and make sure to subscribe. Next week, goal is 2 episodes of College Football Betting with Aaron Torres. We will be back on Sunday night looking at the early lines. And then from there, we will preview week 3 on Thursday. Hope you enjoyed this show. Also, make sure subscribe to the Aaron Torres podcast as well, where I do all sorts of good stuff. Have a mega guest on the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. That is all. Everybody enjoy week 2. It was fun.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom? Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.